You'll be back. Welcome, everybody, to Book Club for Movies for the week of July 13th. I'm Ryan Miller, and back, been bigger, beardier than ever, Matt Amberg.
Yeah, definitely bigger than ever. I've gained so much weight over this thing, man.
Oh?
It's just bad.
You're a coronavirus weight gainer, are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm trying to remember what Beth referred to it as. She called it the
virus.
It was something 15, and I can't think of any word that rhymes with the word 15.
Sweet 15. God, fat 15.
God, that's it. Fast,
is it the?
Fast 15. It's the
fast
one. Yeah,
15.
It's basically a sequel.
So you've gone up. I've gone up also. My wife has gone down, cheated, did it by dieting and hardcore focusing on what she ate.
Sounds stupid, honestly. Like,
this is Fat Club for Movies, everybody, where once a week we watch a fat.
That's right.
And talk about it. I don't know. Taking a week off. We're coming back into it. Come on.
Took 2 weeks off and not really
taking off a week?
So much. I had work that I could not get out of.
I think it might have been a month. But
I don't think it was that long.
Nobody knows. If you're wondering, we still do the thing where we watch a movie and then we talk about it. We invite you to do the same. Come here. Join the conversation. We do it all together. It's fantastic. It's fun. It's Book Club for Movies.
That's what we are.
Did I get that right? It's more of a question at this point. I'm not sure.
I don't think that I am the right person to answer that. Okay.
Fair enough. You know who could answer it?
No.
I was going to say Lin-Manuel Miranda, but
he probably could.
You usually do like a synopsis before we get that far into things.
I do. Here's the thing.
I hear you typing away furiously. Do you not?
Here we go. Book Club for Movie Synopsis for Hamilton. Gonna come at you 2 hours and 40 minutes with an intermission of 10 minutes. Take that out. So it's 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Then,
you've done the
math.
And
then if you even add on, you know, credits and stuff at the end, I mean, really, we're back down to like 2 hours and 15 minutes. But 2 hours and 40 minutes. It's going to be rated PG-13, guys. Look out.
Do you usually do the rating? There?
Never. But this one has S words, and you got to watch out.
What?
Mm-hmm. Directed by Thomas Kail, written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, starring Lin-Manuel Miranda, Philip Sue, Leslie Odom Jr., Angelica Schuyler is the name of a person played by Renee Elise Goldsberry, Jonathan Groff, Chris Jackson, Jasmine Cephas Jones. So many people, lots of people singing. Ensemble, they're in the movie. Why not? Here's your synopsis for Hamilton, the Book Club for Movies Hamilton show. It's a musical. In a musical.
It's like riding a bike, man. Look at this. We just pick it right back up.
I got it.
In a
musical about Hamilton. Jefferson does things, but Hamilton's a Secretary of Treasury. And King George goes mad. He's like the only white guy in the movie is King George for a reason, because he's a douche. I don't know if that part should stay in or not.
That's fine. No, that's PG still.
Yeah. Look, Hamilton is an overnight success. This is something nobody saw coming. There was no way for anybody to know. Disney had no idea. They took a really big...
You're talking about the movie here.
Yeah, they took a giant leap here saying, hey, we don't know anything about this. It's about Hamaltons. They thought, okay, Disney, we had Peter Porker. He's ham related. Maybe this is Spider-Man. We don't know. They said, yo, let's go ahead. And okay, you guys are dressed up and you're singing. So it's a singing Spider-Man movie that takes place. And
you accidentally started talking about an actual thing that existed for a second there.
And then Disney said, okay, here's what we're going to do, Lin-Manuel Miranda. We're going to give you a 2 hour window. Okay, we'll give you 2 hours and 40 minutes. We're only going to show one time, though, on the premiere day, and then it'll be on all the time, but that one time we show it, the only time it's there, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen, and I guess it was a big hit. Hamilton has got some followers, and we watched it. Did you watch it?
Okay.
Beth and I sat down and watched it.
I think you've made the same joke I was going to make. I was going to, as we do in this show, sometimes go into the back. No, absolutely not. Go into the background of the movies that we're watching. I was going to start off with informative Wikipedia description that says that Hamilton, an American musical simply known as Hamilton, is a musical with music. And then it keeps going after that. But I think you pretty much did that. So I'm going to skip that part.
Here, let me sing a song from Hamilton.
Okay, wait, hold on.
Hamilton. Hey, hey, Hamilton. Oh, hey, hey, what you doing over there, Hamilton? I'm having a drink. What you doing there,
also
Hamilton?
One of my favorite jokes. Anytime any musical is basically the snapping from West Side Story for a second. Also, some not musicals, I like it when they do that. No, okay. The other thing I did want to mention, though, is that this might not be a completely traditional show of ours. We needed to do it because we wanted to. But also, in fact, I didn't even put out that we were going to do this show on that, so I don't know.
Hi, everybody. We're professional podcasters.
Any of this
and
matters.
If you've ever wondered if we're available for sponsorships, the answer is absolutely we're willing to take your money and promote any product at all, Alex Jones.
Oh, boy. Come on. Now it's PG-13.
Yeah, see?
Possibly R.
Hamilton. What are you going to do? It just gets you all riled up.
A Hamilton where Alex Jones plays King...
Alexander Jones Hamilton.
Oh boy!
Wait.
No. Well, that would be eight. Okay. So we watched this. We did. I wasn't necessarily expecting to do a show on it when I watched it, so I don't have as many notes. But I'm also the less qualified individual here to have an opinion. So
I don't think either of us are able to have any opinions.
Number one, you love musical theater. Not that I don't.
I do enjoy
musical
theater.
But you said those words to me.
I do. I'm a fan of musical theater.
What would you consider to be...
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay. Is that the top right there?
it's not really... Can you consider it musical theater? Yes. Do I? Absolutely. Is it my favorite? Of course. Is it the best? Likely not. I don't know that... Okay, so before you even get to the is there a best, the answer is I have no idea. Do I have a favorite?
Sure. Okay, yes, actually, I'm sorry.
More likely, yes. I there are a number of shows I really enjoy. The most recent that I've seen live was actually Cabaret. We saw it a year ago, 2 years ago, something like that. Loved it. Great show. I love the movie. That's one that we actually have the... Like, we own the record to, like, the sound, the cast soundtrack and all that.
That's the Liza Minnelli?
It is Liza Minnelli.
Family? Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Bob Fosse.
Ah, which is another name I've heard from The Birdcage and nowhere else, but it appears...
That's very funny that's where you know Bob Fosse from is the
first
bird.
Time I heard that name. Yep, from Robin Williams. So.
Yeah, Bob Fosse was a most... best known as, like, the choreographer, but he was... a director for theater and film. He acted. He did.
Also, I didn't know that.
Like he. I mean, he did the some of the musical. He did Chicago. That was a big one of his. Pippin was another big one for him.
Oh, Pippin. They have. There's an encore episode that show that I talked about briefly there for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
They did one on Pippin, which I want to say is bizarre.
Sure.
Did I get that right? Okay.
Sure. Fosse's interesting character, interesting stories behind him. There's actually a TV show that was on FX or TNT or something. We haven't even started it yet. I've only watched trailers for this thing called Fosse Verdon, and it's about him and his wife, and it's Michelle Williams and Sam Rockwell.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
When you're thinking who's going to be a great actor in a movie, I think Samothy Rockwell.
Does he play Fosse?
He does. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah.
So you have a background in this stuff. Not even just a love, but also a background, but I guess maybe
I can't say that I mean, yes, I've been on stage and I've done musicals before, but I never did like a run. Like, it was always like a one-off show. Maybe
because by the end, everybody's like, nailed it.
Don't. Done. You don't ever need
first
to,
try.
Yeah. They were like, you know what? You don't ever need to sing again on stage. You're perfect as is. Let's go ahead and just pause it right there and wrap it on up. But to give you an idea, I have been in Rocky. I've never actually done the stage production. I've only done the in theater production, so the like the movies playing in the background. I've done that.
Oh man,
I did that when awesome. I did that when I was a kid, and I was in a production of Grease.
Nice. Wait, were you the titular Grease?
I was the car.
So cool, man. Missing out. So unfortunately, Hamilton though did not nail it on the first try, it seems, and has been going for so long that they decided to put it on film, as you hinted at also. And yes, jeez, we did watch it, and for all of the reasons we talked about now, I'm super curious about your thoughts.
In terms of lots of things or just one thing? Or
hey, you can start anywhere you want.
Sure.
All I can really say is that I enjoyed it quite a lot. The songs are stuck in my head. I think it was well written, even though so much of it went over my head. I could at least recognize that.
Tons of the historical stuff. And there were lots of little bits that I just, like, I totally didn't hear or missed, and Beth pointed out a number of like, oh, well, he sang that and that's what that is. Oh, got it. Okay, good.
Did you go back for a second? Because
not yet. Not yet. Okay, definitely right. Going
I wanted
to.
200%
I'm going to watch that. This is one actually that we liked it enough to where we will probably actually buy the record to have it on. I really like...
I could see that.
Beyond everything, the thing that I have to put on the top is that, to me, most musicals have one or two numbers that don't generally do it for me. I'm kind of like, could go without it. This one actually hit it, man. I liked all
really?
Of them. And I mean, I admit, I think part of it definitely comes from the way it was filmed. If I saw it on stage, I think I'd be in the same position where I really did. I loved every minute of it. I loved that the cast of that was freaking great, man. Everybody, top to bottom, outstanding. Leslie Odom, I had no idea that dude was freaking just a champion of musicals. He was terrific.
I'm sorry, I don't know the names. Who did he play?
Leslie Odom was Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, okay. And Lafayette.
Leslie Odom was Aaron Burr. Thomas Jefferson was
Lafayette. That's all I could tell you.
I'm trying to remember who Thomas Jefferson was.
So while you look that up, part of the reason I mean, we're talking about the right thing. I want to talk about performances. I want to talk about, I mean, we can get into story, obviously. But when it comes to the things I normally key in on, like direction and stuff like that, I don't know if I have much to add. You know, I could have gone back to my Busby Berkeley notes from college, I guess. But let's face it. I'm not going to. So I don't have much to offer in the way of that. I don't know if you will either, but
no.
Okay.
David Diggs, that's who it was. David Diggs played both. Okay. He played the Marquis de Lafayette, and he also played Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
He was outstanding. So was Renee Elise Goldsberry. She was Angelica Schuyler. She was fantastic.
I will say this. The guys are so good, they're almost as good as the girls. That's how good they are.
Fantastic. I have to say, and this
the
is
girls
like,
are amazing.
I have to, oh my gosh, the girls, especially the triplets, they were beyond great.
Amazing.
The Schuylers, all three of them were fantastic.
Pitch freaking perfect, honestly.
I have to tell you that I hate this, but the standout for me was King George. Like everybody,
oh, are you kidding?
Everybody was unbelievably great, but Jonathan Groff, man, he had the facial expressions, the it's like when Miranda wrote, that was where he was like, I'm gonna have the most fun here.
Oh,
because
absolutely. Are you kidding? Yeah.
They were the ones that had some of the wittiest dialogue in the wittiest lyrics. His facial expressions, his ability to kind of draw everything to him where, yes, I mean, every moment he's on screen, he essentially, or on stage, he is essentially coming out by himself as a transition piece for the background players so that they can move things around, get set design changed up.
Very little screen time, stage time, whatever.
Yeah, he's
actually for him, yeah.
He has, I think, four songs, and the songs are not terribly long. But he was terrific, man. He was great.
And he's my wife pointed this out, Kristoff from Frozen or Frozen 2.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's perfect. That makes sense. I have not seen those, but it makes sense that he'd be in Frozen.
But yeah, a bunch of fun. Like absolutely. I don't know if he was my favorite, but he was absolutely, for as little as he had to do, was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know that he was my, his songs were my favorite, because they were like, they were, so all of the most of the songs, it's rap, it's some jazz, there's some hip, some hip hop that's not
hippity hop, right?
Yeah. And his stuff is all like this kind of, like, it's obviously supposed to be different because he is the Mad King George, and it's total pop.
It's vacuous. Yeah, it's completely meant to stick in your head, and it totally does.
It does.
That was the song my daughter was singing nonstop after the movie was over. Like, that's the song that I constantly, the refrain is, yeah, you can't get it out of your head.
You can't. And I think that's one of those great things about like a really good musical has songs like that. And not every musical does. There are musicals where, man, I could not tell you one song from it. Like, I don't know that I could sing a ton of songs from West Side Story. I can really think of two. And really, it's me just going, when you're
it's
a jet,
snaps.
You're a jet.
Yeah, yeah, oh, there you go. Well, and I'll even add that when plays have songs like that, they are, like, they would give their left leg for an actual poppy hit like that. And here,
oh, yeah,
in Hamilton, it's a throwaway. Like, it's the thing that you can reproduce in your head, whereas all the other music is so technical and complicated that you can't, like, you're not going to sit there singing not going to throw away my shot. Like, I can't remember two words put together from that whole song. And
you,
it's
barely got the title.
Amazing. Yeah, exactly. So,
which was also amazing. That whole, like, I loved that not going to throw away my shot, that song having reprises that come up throughout the show. Fantastic again.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, the fact here, I think, is, and this sounds weird, but everybody on stage that has a real, true, quote-unquote, speaking role, anybody who was a major player in history gets their moment on stage. And all of them, every one of them, knock it out of the park. And I'll tell you, the guy who I think was just unbelievable was Chris Jackson. He played George Washington. And,
oh, sure, yeah.
There's a moment where it's right going into the intermission, and I think he has the last song going into the intermission. It was his delivery on the last little bits and lines, and the way he slams things down, like, just incredibly powerful. Like,
he's super good.
And I mean, it's impossible to really, you know, it's hard to kind of judge this movie in anything other than it being a really great stage play. The other thing that I took away from this is I loved how this was shot, and the fact that it was a combination of shooting, which I didn't know, and I still don't quite understand how they did it.
Yeah, what do you mean?
So it was shot live, but then there were a number of shots where they did close-ups where they had dudes on the stage.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about it.
Like,
well,
straight up, they were on stage. Like, yeah, you'd think.
For sure.
You'd think they'd, like, be, yeah, because they mentioned it. I read it somewhere that they had, I don't know that it was all shot live. I think chunks of it, I think the whole thing was shot live, and then they added other scenes where they refilmed it, and they brought the cameras onto the stage. Because there are shots there that are just unbelievable. That, as far as I can read, and as far as I found, there's no other way for them to have done it. Like, I can't figure out how you do that.
So when I say that you read this, because I'm curious, because I can tell some of it's obviously the lenses. Like,
it was filmed over the course of 3 days.
That I expected. Like, I didn't think they got it all in one take for sure. But it actually wouldn't put cameras on stage out of the question either. It's just that I know for a lot of those, I can tell it's a really long freaking lens.
Oh, you know? Sure.
So I would be curious what they did feel like they needed to get on the stage for in some instances, because it's, I guess I can say that about the direction. It's seamless. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, the movie to me did not look like it didn't look like it was filmed over 3 days. Like, I legitimately thought they did one show. Like, I've seen shows,
sure,
that are just,
yeah,
that great, and they, you know, again, the cabaret show we saw. unreal. Like, that was top to bottom beautiful, amazing. Same thing with the most, actually, you know what, it wasn't Cabaret, Phantom was the most recent thing I saw, musical theater, and that was also amazing. But I didn't know it was filmed over 3 days until I just, you know,
it's seamless enough. You could have told me either one. You could have been like, over 3 days, or nope, got it all in one shot. And I would have been like, holy, it's
sure
crazy.
and some of the one of the things that I do want to call out, there's one moment, one really, really in particular moment. And I bet I in my head when I saw it, I went, oh, I bet Ryan kind of just went, that was nice. They did a brilliant thing with their stage. So the stage production themselves.
Oh, sure.
They had in the dead center, they had three or four rings that rotated in various directions.
I want to say it's three at the most. It's because it seems very simple at times. It just seems like two alternating directions is all.
Right. But I think the middle also, I think there's a tiny circular one in the middle that, but right. In any case, there's a moment where, Lin-Manuel Miranda is standing on one of the circles and his soon to be first wife is on the outside circle. I think it brings her around and she kind of steps up into it. And this is my memory. I could be thinking about this wrong. It may just be one of them was on the circular thing and he stepped into it or she did, but it was just one of those, like, that was a perfectly directed moment. There was nothing that could have solidified the song, the meaning, the emotion between the two people better than them being on this rotating thing and the rotation stopping at just the perfect time so they are right in front of each other and, like, now getting ready to,
yeah,
you know.
I'd be curious if that's been used with other productions or if it's something that, you know, because I want to say that's done twice. There are two scenes like that that make heavy use of those platforms.
Definitely.
And I can't remember what either of them are, but yeah, I do remember thinking
the other one.
Cool.
I feel like is representative of people walking around, like it's literally people going in and out of the scene. But I don't. It's two hours and 40 minutes. 10 minutes of intermission.
They're used at emotional moments, like they're used to emphasize the text of what's actually going on, right? Like,
and
they're not just used like, this is cool, look at me, zippy zoo, you know,
right.
Now I'm dancing over here or something like that.
And but and the thing is, like, they're used to the best use of them. That's not right.
They're used to the best use. That is it, and I'm gonna stand by it.
All right, yeah, Hamilton.
TM.
Disney Plus, I honestly, like, here's the thing. I want to see the show, but I admit now that I have seen it live. I've seen it like this.
With Lin-Manuel,
with Leslie Odom, with all of these people, I don't know that I want to go see the show live now, honestly, because it's, no matter what you do, maybe there'll be amazing actors, but it's not going to be them. And this isn't, like, this to me is probably how a lot of people felt when Phantom of the Opera first started touring. And I can't remember the guy's name, but there was this one, the first major guy that played the Phantom. He was
Gerard Butler, I think.
That's it. Yes. Okay. Directed by Joel Schumacher. Right. That's true.
R.I.P.
Actually, it was
Paul Walker. No, it is. Yeah,
but this isn't like that to me, this is probably like that to me, where that original singer for so many people, like, that's their Phantom, and other Phantoms just don't quite hit the mark. And I can watch that one. It's on tape. It's, you know, I can watch the movie.
Yeah. Is there how does these things work? Like, is this available for people to recreate at this point, or does it have
200%.
To be? Oh, okay.
No, it's all, it's right. Like everything else, it's just like Phantom. It's just a licensing thing. You pay to get the thing, and then I don't know how it works for such large productions, because there are certain aspects to each. Like Phantom, for example, there's a moment that happens in every version of it, and it usually happens over the crowd, where the chandelier drops and it goes from, like, the ceiling and it goes crashing down, and that's a huge part of it. But I don't know how they figure that out, like, because like there's requirements, I'm sure, that they have to hit in order to do the production. So I kind of wonder what they are for this. Like, I know that circular thing in the middle, like, is that actually a requirement? Do they have to have the rotating stage? They might. That might actually be a requirement of the show.
Well, forget that, man. I feel like I could build a rotating stage. I couldn't sing some of those songs. You know, like, I feel like that would be a more restrictive requirement. Oh, sure. Is to actually, you know, string these words together on time within the course of this production.
The thing I hate saying this because it sounds rude and it sounds awful, but
oh, good.
Cool. The reality,
cutting this out and releasing it alone out of context.
The reality of any stage production, no matter how great it is, there is always somebody that can sing it. Now, here's the caveat to
now,
that.
Just say a couple words and I can put them together, and it's me.
And it's me.
Okay, good. Cut.
But here's the caveat, right? The caveat is that you can be a technically amazing singer, dancer, but maybe you're a bad actor. You could be a technically great singer, dancer, and maybe you're a good actor, but maybe your singing doesn't have enough emotion behind it because you're an actor first, a singer second. You know, there's a billion different things, and you see it in every production that's ever been made, that's ever been a remake of or a follow-up or a secondary production, what have you, there are always moments where you will find, that person wasn't the greatest so-and-so. They didn't have the delivery here.
Sure, yeah.
And that's the thing, is like, and Broadway in particular it's similar to Hollywood in that it is huge and it is also incredibly small. You know, it's for how many actors out there that have all the talent in the world that are still doing, you know, working in restaurants or doing other things because they're not getting their big break against the people that did, that were good in one thing but suck in another. You know, it's
right. And I mean, I won't say necessarily a bad thing. I don't think I'm qualified, but
you are.
There are times where I feel like Aaron Burr, for one, I feel like misses a note or two. It might just be two again in the whole thing, but
sure,
it's not perfect. And I'm coming from a very small city where my entire experience has been Newsies and Beauty and the Beast. And while we do get some very talented people and some pretty cool overflow from Santa Barbara or even LA every now and then, it's PCPA is what's around here. I don't know if that matters, but part of me wonders if that's part of it too, is yeah, I know I'm not gonna get Broadway level recreation here, but part of me is like, yeah, you know, I'll go. I just like the soundtrack enough that, yeah, I'd like to see a live performance of it, type
totally,
thing.
Totally.
So yeah, I think I'm with you. I think we have been spoiled, but you know, especially given some time, maybe in a year or two, if it rolls around, I might still go check it out, you know, locally.
No, I mean, if it came up and it was like, hey, I've got tickets. Yeah, of course. Like, I'm not going to bat an eye and be like, well, it's not going to be. No, of course, I'm going to go.
Yeah,
and
okay.
I am definitely going to have a great time. There is almost no question about that. But for my own druthers, like, I'm not going to go out of my way to buy tickets to it. There are so many other shows out there that I haven't seen. I haven't watched on video. I have never seen a live performance of on
gotcha.
Video that I'd
sure.
rather spend the money on, you know? And this is a case where I think Lin-Manuel Miranda did the right thing here in that he got the very best version of this, I think, on screen you could get.
Yeah.
From a on stage production. I can tell you in all honesty, I have zero interest in seeing a movie version of this. And by movie, I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like the film version where they've got the, you know, the Revolutionary War is there. Right.
It would be an adaptation at that point. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even if you had Miranda do it, you could have all the same people, all the same stuff. I don't necessarily want to see the effects like that. That's not like, this is a stage play, and there's a reason why it works for me. And that doesn't mean it can't work as a film. It might be great. Phantom of the Opera works great as a film. There's plenty of them.
Does it?
Sure.
I don't think I've seen any of them. Okay.
Phantom is great as a film. It works on so, like, Phantom is great in all. The book is wonderful. The plays, the stage productions are great. And the movies are great. I legitimately, even the one with Gerard Butler.
Okay. All right. Okay.
He is not awful. And it's a it's a fun story. This is one where, yeah, I don't know that I really want that. If it, again, if it happened,
yeah, I mean, yeah,
maybe, but I'm way more apt to, you know, you put that out and I'm way more apt to just go back to what I just watched, you know, show me the stage
It would be
version.
The same old for me. Like anytime you hear there's a new movie coming out of a video game or a book or whatever, there's always that part of you that's like, nah,
yeah,
you
know. I do want to watch another Tomb Raider.
So I'd probably just view it like that. I'd be like, you know, I, especially if it is carefully adapted, like that's part of the draw for me is how did they adapt this to a movie? How, what significant changes did they make to make this a movie? Because you're right. This thing is perfectly written to take advantage of the medium that it's being presented in, you know?
Right.
Like,
I mean, you saw Les Mis, didn't you? Didn't you watch Les Mis?
Yeah. And that's a great example, actually, because
perfect
they did
example.
The thing where it, the, all the audio was live, or however you actually say that. And it's really weird. My wife and daughter are literally watching it in the other room right now.
The Hugh Jackman one?
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know much about that play other than my brother was in it in high school. So
it's a good play.
The movie was good, though. I liked it.
I like it. It's a good show.
All right.
Fun songs.
Well, I couldn't possibly offer up another opinion about any musical theater. So do you have anything?
It's no Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay. It's true. Get that out there.
Sure. Like, Lin-Manuel Miranda's biggest failure is writing this so late that Tim Curry wasn't in it.
Wait, is he dead? Is Tim Curry dead?
He's not dead, but he's in a wheelchair. He's had a stroke. The guy barely.
What? Oh, really?
How have you not? This is years. Like, he's been in it. He had a stroke like 2 years ago.
Tim Curry is timeless, man. You don't, even after he's dead, I'm going to be saying he's fine, right? Because he's Tim Curry.
TC is good, right?
He could be Hamilton.
He's Hamilton. I want you to think very, very carefully about how many stars you give this, because it should be relevant to Hamilton. Stars, Hamilton.
51 for every star on the flag of...
We only had 13 colonies at the time, but let's go with it.
But it's the unrelated then. It's
yes.
It's just 51 stars.
50 out of 13.
Hamilton was fun. Everybody go watch it. We next week are going to do another movie, I hear.
Oh, threatening people already, are we?
You're right. I don't know. We haven't talked about it. We had talked about maybe doing Just Mercy. I'm not going to talk about it this show. You didn't get to watch it this week, and I'm going to save it for... I don't care. I'll say it. I'm going to be watching Selma. And I Am Not Your Negro.
Are you telling me that, or is that the title of something?
A little bit of both. But good. I'm going to save Just Mercy for that kind of a threefer. So
all right.
If you wanted to include that next week, we could. If not, it doesn't matter.
Well, do that, I'm going to watch Black Klansman, and we'll see what happens.
Hey, well, why don't we just make... Okay. Oh, boy. This could be the worst. You know, we handled Hamilton okay this week for a couple of terminally white guys. Do we want to make next week a Black Lives Matter episode?
Sure. I'm in.
For lack of a better word?
I like it.
Okay. We'll bring our entries. You know all three of mine so far.
Yeah, I am legitimately going to watch Black Klansman.
I might do Black Klansman as well. Four movies, sure. Why not?
Sure. Okay, yeah, I'm going to meet you halfway here. I'm going to do Black Klansman for sure. I think I'm going to do Sorry to Bother You Again. I want to get a rewatch on that. I've been wanting to for a while. And I'm going to try and catch up on with Selma as well. That was the one that I know I wanted to see.
Looks real good.
The other one that I'm going to... give a go to and see if I can manage. I'm going to try and watch Loving. If that's got, maybe I won't.
It's got Ellen Page and Leonardo DiCaprio in
it? No. It's got Ruth Negga and Joel Edgerton. It's actually supposed to be a good movie, and it's about Richard and Mildred Loving, who were the first.
Oh, sure. Okay. Gotcha.
Interracial couple in like Virginia. So I might try to watch.
Well, if
that
I'm
too.
Slipping any of those, I'm slipping in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which I've never seen still.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So Either way, come back next week for what could only be the most unqualified viewing of all of those movies, and at the very least, Black Lives Matter. So
they do.
That's next week. Do you have any movies you want to talk about for the rest of the show this week?
Oh, rest of the show.
I got a handful.
I could. I watched a movie last night. I told you all about it. Or maybe it wasn't last night. It was the night before.
Goonies?
No, Clue. I watched Clue.
Oh, right. Yes. Speaking of Tim Curry.
That's right. Speaking of Tim Curry. Correct. Clue. Clue was very good. I like Clue a lot.
Clue's good. This would only be the third time I think we've talked about it on the show.
Which
isn't enough. That was the only reason I mentioned
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah. Get your stuff together here, there, Chester Cheetah.
Okay. What if I know that two of ours have crossover? I don't know if you were going to talk about these.
I don't actually have anything that I can remember that I was going to really talk about.
Oh, well, here. Let me jog your memory. Decline, this will follow up from our Decline of Western Civilization discussion. We did part three, I guess, last time we were doing this.
Yes.
You watched part one, right?
I did.
Okay, yeah, so did I. And I mentioned this to you that because you, the reason I knew you watched it, you sent me a picture of a new record that you and or Beth bought.
That's right.
Of X after having watched that movie. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, that's right. I need to do the same thing for Fear. And then I actually rewatched part one. And I don't think I do, actually. I had forgotten completely how despicable Leaving is as a performer in that movie. I don't know. I haven't Wikipedia'd him. That's how much it turned me off. But even on the off chance that the band itself, titled Fear, and then the stage persona is a play on how racism and bigotry and homophobia comes from fear way deep down or something like that. Even if that's the case, I don't think I'll give it a listen to for now. maybe I'll just go get X instead like you did.
Yeah, I mean, you can at least musically they stayed normal. It wasn't until after the music where they went and where the what's
her
name
went crazy.
You
said she's kind of a right. Okay, great. Super. What'd you think about part one, at least? Had you seen it before?
Yeah. Long time ago. Oh, okay. Right. It was funny. It was because watching part three, I was like, oh, man, this is just like part one. And then watching part one was like, oh, wow. Part three was like 10 times that one section of part one that's only used right. for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it kind of dawned on me, like, I started wondering, I really got to watch part two now because I want to see what the evolution is from one to two to three. And I'm curious why. I mean, I guess part three is definitely more about the gutter punk kids as opposed to the musicians themselves, which
right, yeah.
part one was definitely more music based than fan based, I think.
No, definitely. And I think it's worth it if only for the quick portrait we get of the Germs, which, if I remembered anything from that movie, it was, just that whole situation where they're intercutting that performance where he's plowed out of his mind with their home life where he's making eggs and talking about the dead guy they found in their backyard that they took pictures with for a while. Like, it's honestly, it seems like a dream. It seems like urban legend, the movie, just people
with his
talking.
Girlfriend, right? She was right, in that, yeah. She's in the kitchen with him, yep. And they're just like sitting there giggling and laughing about being wrecked all the time. And
it's nuts.
Darby talks about how he basically has to drink all day long. And
yep.
Like, yeah. We know why you fell apart there, Darby.
But yeah, I mean, yeah.
Interesting, though. Still super.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
That was the one I knew that we watched. And the second one. Oh, it was going to be Just Mercy. Right.
Which, by the way, every time you mention that movie, I think it's the movie about with John Cusack and Paul Dano about the Beach Boys.
Oh, Love and Mercy, right?
It's called Love and Mercy.
Also super good. Yeah, sure. Watch that.
Still haven't seen it.
Watch maybe the widest biopic for our Black Lives Matter episode next week.
By the way, okay, you've seen that movie, right?
Yeah.
Does Manson ever come up in that movie at all?
Charles Manson?
Yeah.
No. Not okay. that I'm aware of.
Interesting.
Why?
Oh, he definitely came up in the Beach Boys' lives.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess they were pretty...
He got, I don't remember if it was Brian or if it was Dennis.
It was probably Brian because they ran in like the spiritualistic circles type thing.
But they totally had a moment where they crossed paths for a short time.
And the only reason I know that the Beach Boys ran in those circles is because they also ran into my dad while doing all that stuff. Or actually, no, that was
Did
Mike Love.
Did your dad know Charles Manson?
My dad was Charles Manson, actually.
What?
No, my dad ran into Mike Love is what it was, actually.
Mike Love.
While also running in those spiritualism circles. But my dad grew up surfing in Carpinteria South. Yeah. Anyway, so
he was surfing USA.
He was. Every day.
He surfed safari.
Can I give you just some blurbs here?
Yeah, blurb me.
Maybe some talking points if you want to
Sure.
throw them at me.
Crash and burn at me.
Edited a version of Speed for my kid to watch.
Oh, you took out the part where she sits in the bubble gum. Good.
Well, it's gross, dude.
It's it's awful.
Also, she's just trying to go get away from Alan Ruck, which he's got to be the nicest guy on the planet Earth.
You'd think. What did you edit out?
Swearing. Just the words.
Oh.
One of the best of all times. Speed.
I love it.
One of the best, one of those of all time.
Pop quiz, hotshot.
Pop quiz. It's the answer is Speed.
That's the answer.
Also watch Speed 2.
Not as great, but I don't hate it.
I mean, I don't hate it like I wouldn't hate any movie of that era.
Let me put it this way.
Any kind of thriller of that era.
I
don't think we'd be talking about it at all if it wasn't called Speed 2 right now.
I don't like that movie as much as I don't like Die Hard 4. Wait, never mind. I don't like that movie at all.
Wait, Speed 2 or Die Hard 4?
Both.
Okay. It's... Maybe you've forgotten this. It has the...
Jeremy Irons, Jason Patrick.
Well, Jeremy Irons is Die Hard with a Vengeance.
No. Isn't Jeremy Irons the bad guy in Speed 2?
No, it's freaking Willem Dafoe.
It's Willem Dafoe! I knew that 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. You're right about Jason Patrick. But you have yet to mention Jango Fett in what has got to be one of his first starring roles.
I had no idea Temuera Morrison. I like how you're like Jango Fett, whereas I'm like Aquadad. Whatever, though.
Either one. He's the same guy and does a fantastic job in this thing, actually. Memorable for that, at least retrospectively.
What if Jango Fett was Aquaman's father? That would have been great.
It would make Speed 2 a better movie. Just about anything would.
Wait, Willem Dafoe is in Aquaman also.
Is he?
Isn't he?
I don't think we know where Willem Dafoe is at any point.
Dafoe lives in a very odd plane of existence.
You'll want to talk about this. I also saw The Way Back.
Oh, hey, The Way Back. That was pretty good.
Yeah. Did you see it yet?
I like The Machine more than I like the movie. No, I haven't seen it yet, but I do want to watch it.
You do. You told me you were going to watch that thing no matter what, even though we know what it is and where it goes and what it does, right?
I know what it is. I like Affleck and I like sports movies, so.
I don't think you're going to be disappointed, and I actually think, okay, you're not going to be disappointed in that you know exactly what it is and what it does and
yeah,
all of that, but I was pleasantly surprised at the take on it, let's say. I don't think it's fantastic or anything, and I think it is still what we expected, but there, throughout the movie, there was a moment where I was kind of trying to figure out what the focus was, because it starts with him addicted. He's an alcoholic, and then he finds the team, and then usually the story goes that the team kind of brings him back and helps him through, and they win a game in the process type thing.
Right, even if it's just one game.
And I don't want to spoil this for you, but it kind of rearranges stuff in a way that decentralizes the focus, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to figure out, okay, well, is the addiction the thing or is the sports the thing? And they do it in such a way that I think the answer was it's not just the game was important the whole time or the alcoholic or alcoholism or whatever. And maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but it seemed to me that they kind of shifted focus in a way that made it pretty enjoyable or unexpected, which made it enjoyable.
That's excellent to hear. I really like... there's a movie that came out a long while back that's got...
A Way Back?
Paul Giamatti in it.
Sideways.
That was it. He was in that. No, it was called Win-Win. Did you ever see that one?
No.
Yeah.
The one with Amanda Bynes and Malcolm in the Middle.
It is not. I love that, though. No, this one actually is a real movie. And it has the only other person I remember from it is Amy Ryan from The Office. She was Steve Carell's girlfriend. Like, she's Holly that, and she ends up with her.
Oh, right. Not Steve Carell's wife.
No, not the real, gotcha. Not Nancy. Okay. Yeah, the fake one.
Right. Yes. Freaking Gone Baby Gone, Boston, whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
Her.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
She's in it. That is another one of those movies that I have always kind of gone back to, kind of like that, where I felt like there's a little bit of the wrestling the thing? Is the story around it the thing? And it kind of does it all. And it does it. And it's Paul Giamatti, man.
Does it do it in a way? Because with Way Back, what I was expecting was kind of, because as much as we love those old movies that do exactly what we're expecting them to do, it does it in a way that's so formulaic that nothing seems to matter almost. Does that fall into that, or is it kind of still give it some weight?
No, I think there's more weight to it because, okay, to my memory, it's still pretty tropey, but to my memory, it was one of those, there were definitely different directions that it could have gone. And you can see how it could have gone based on all the different factors. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't know. I like it.
Okay, cool. All right. I'm going to save that review for any number of movies from here on out.
I'm legitimately interested. I got to rewatch that one because, again, I remember really, really liking it.
Have you ever heard of a movie called Free Solo?
Yes. It's it was the one that came out after Solo, A Star Wars Story.
We went to Yosemite
Yosemite!
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
We've just kind of been with the whole coronavirus waiting for it to open because it's been closed, but Yosemite is also a park that you kind of drive through mostly. So social distancing built right in, it seems. So it finally opened. We got a reservation. We went, and I didn't know this movie existed. My wife had already seen it, and we drove by a couple climbers on the way. So I don't know. Kind of spurred the interest. And you said you had seen it or you hadn't? I'm sorry.
No, I've heard of it. Right. I saw the trailers. I'm familiar with it, but I don't. All right. I didn't.
It's the guy free soloing, is climbing without ropes or net or anything. And he did that to El Cap, which nobody has done before and since, I believe.
He climbed on top of a Macintosh operating system.
Really fascinating portrait. Some of it very funny. All the interviews with his mom are kind of funny because she's like, you know, he was always kind of different. I think today you might call it Asperger's. And I'm like, you would still call it that. Yes, he's like, this is after watching him for only 10 minutes and being like, dude's got something. not in a bad way, but
no,
obviously
no,
he's
just
a
like,
different type of person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But other than that, also, you know what? Coming on the heels of the last documentary we talked about, Decline of Western Civilization Part 3, where we, or at least I, had some kind of issues with how the filmmaker was inserted into that movie.
Yeah.
I love the way the filmmaker's inserted into Free Solo because they're all about technique, and they actually do talk a fair bit about the fact that they're there to film this, and that's kind of making him do it in a way, or is it, or will he do something because the cameras are on? Basically, it's a hand-wringing is the wrong word because it's appropriate hand-wringing, but about the fact that he might just die in the end, and you know what was our part in that,
right?
You know?
And do we get to release this?
Basically, but it's done really well. It's all done really well.
Nice.
I was absolutely on that wavelength, so
love that.
Yeah, I would recommend it. The movie, not
free soloing
climbing
and dying
a rope. Yeah.
You know what? I don't know why this reminded me. I am halfway through something though.
Cool.
That is a weird movie that's totally unrelated
Total
to this.
Recall.
But it's because you mentioned I just watched that 2 nights ago.
Really?
Okay. So I had this is a this is actually a serious question now.
Wait, you forgot that you watched Total Recall?
Yeah,
is
yeah,
that
yeah.
What
yeah.
I'm doing? Okay.
Here is I have a question. This is not just for you. This is for the viewers out there too. Okay. Total Recall. You've got Cohagen, who's kind of, that's Ronnie Cox, he's the big bad, but underneath him, you've got Michael Ironside. You've got Richter. Great bad guy. Okay. But nice. On the flip side here, in RoboCop, you've got Red Foreman as the bad guy. Now, my question is, who's the better bad guy? Both Verhoeven flicks, both very bloody, both characters relatively similar to each other, almost in every respect. Who's the better bad guy, Michael Ironside or Red Foreman? I just don't know.
It's a real Sophie's Choice. I choose the girl from Sophie's Choice.
That's right. I would also choose Meryl Streep as the better bad guy.
But speaking, I guess, of movies that don't go where you expect them to.
Cool Runnings, Bob said.
Recently talked about this, so I won't spend too much time on it. Other than to give my dissenting opinion, perhaps, I watched Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Station.
Name another fluffy 80s romp that goes completely existential for the sequel.
Oh, man.
I challenge you.
Yeah.
You can't.
No.
And it's great fun in that respect, but the movie kind of drags.
Where do you think it drags? That's my question.
The whole thing, man. Well, so the first, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, has their report to focus on, and the whole movie is essentially in service of that. It seems like they tried to do the same thing here with the Battle of the Bands, but none of the rest of the movie drives towards that. So it's, when I say it's fun in that, like, it goes so far out and it's wild for sure, but it doesn't have the same drive that the first movie had, it seems, which affects the finale and everything.
Sure. I can see what you're saying. I like it.
It's more like a bunch of vignettes that are fun to watch instead of something that builds and builds and builds, you know?
I think that movie probably feels better as a movie on the heels of the first one, as more of a watch it close together as opposed to watching it years apart.
Which is what I did.
and I think it fits that way further because at the beginning of the first movie, even though everything drives to in service of the report, even in the first movie, Rufus makes it abundantly clear they are going to make the world what it is. And the follow-up, while you get that at the very beginning, I don't understand how you could ever be like, yeah, this movie's not as good. They're just fighting a guy named Chuck D'Anomalos, who's a former gym teacher. I don't understand what your issue is. Chuck D'Anomalos.
No, it's not with that. No, absolutely.
Who also was the South African guy in Lethal Weapon 2, by the way. And I met him on the set of Tales from the Crypt when I got to visit Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, yeah? With him and T. Daltz?
With him and T. He was the other main actor. It was him and Dalton. And I really wish after all this time I still didn't have a bad experience with T. Daltz. Anyways, I think they go together more along those lines. But also, that movie to me, there because of how off the wall it is in every respect, their version of hell that they created is fantastic.
Walking around with death. Yeah. And it's death from the seventh seal.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. They go through the movie. No, it's wild.
But it's not just that. It's when they're actually in hell and the weird things that they see and the way hell is built. And then having to come back and the whole heaven bit with death is, again, I see what you're saying. I guess I don't put either of those movies into a pantheon where either of them is better than the other. They are all just part of the thing that is
sure.
Blinted.
No, guilty as charged. Like, and I would be lying if I said that this wasn't a way to talk about Bill and Ted Face the Music in some form or another.
Sure.
Because you're right. I place that first movie on a pedestal. Like, it is that perfect representation of a time and place and a positivity that I think doesn't exist and I don't know if can exist. So I'm placing a lot on Bill and Ted Face the Music. Like, I don't know if it can live up to my expectations. If it does, because yes, on its face, it's all such a light and airy thing. Where Bogus Journey doesn't feel like that is that it, when I say cash-in, it kind of does feel like it was more, like Face the Music appears to be Alex Winter's baby, you know?
Like, well, I mean, and this is something keeping in mind that he and Keanu have both said repeatedly right. For decades, we're happy to do it.
Yeah.
We've never had the time, the money, the script never came together. And so, I mean,
So yes, I have high hopes for that reason, right? That they're putting that amount of care into it personally and professionally, but we'll see. Just wanted to
I'm with you, man. Something I found recently was that I didn't notice that was a movie detail in the first movie is that when Missy is driving her convertible, the license plate says Missy, but when she's in the station wagon, it says Mom.
Nice. Which I wonder, I mean, she's got to be in Face the Music, but who is she going to be married to at this point?
That would be the best part is for her to like somehow be married somebody else in their family. Like she's got to marry Deacon. She's got to marry Ted's brother. Ted's little brother that remember he screws with Napoleon.
Oh, man.
The possibilities
are endless, I'm telling you.
That would be the best if she was suddenly married
that would be amazing.
To his brother.
Because it can't be Bill or Ted. Even though in Bogus Journey, do they say that...
They're married to the princesses.
Yeah, that's right.
Or they're getting married to the princesses.
Yes, that's... Yeah, they're the bad robots.
The evil robot usses?
Yes. Trying to prevent that.
We just totally killed good robot usses.
The dialogue's still top notch in Bogus Journey. I won't say that it's not.
You might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later, you dance with a reaper. My favorite part of that is how he says that into the microphone at the Battle of the Bands, and then he does this little thing with his wrist, and he swings the scythe over his head in a circle, just the blade.
He's on the catwalk,
does that, and he goes, and he walks backwards, like shaking his boobs at the crowd.
You can't see it, but Matt's being very sassy on camera right now.
Sassy.
I've got two more movies, and they're basically the same thing. I don't know which one to talk about first. One of them's called A Talking Cat, !
Okay. What's the other one called?
It's Inception.
Okay. So both of them have to do with totems.
You know, I'll just say this about Inception. Everybody knows Nolan, et cetera, whatever. Tenet's coming up, super excited, even though I guess he's... What is his deal? I mean, yes, he wants every movie to be in a theater, but apparently he doesn't care if people die for it or something.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. I will say this about him. And we've done Following was the one. We've only done one Nolan, I think, right? We did Following.
I think, did we not do Inception like 100 years ago?
I don't think so.
I mean, we've talked about a bunch of his movies. I know
we're
going to
do it now.
I know we've talked about the Batman movies repeatedly.
The Batman, that's true, we have. With Inception, I think I came to an understanding with him where I get how he can be divisive as a filmmaker because he makes these very overwrought movies, and I don't necessarily mean that negatively, but they kind of tread that thin line where it could easily be completely silly instead. You know, like the moment the wrong tone is taken, like his premises are just freaking ridiculous. Like there's always so many rules and it is so very overwrought. They're all very self-serious, stuff like that. So I get where if you can't buy into that, like if that's the suspension you can't make, like his movies must be absolute tripe, you know, like,
sure.
I get that. But then I'm not one of those people. But also in the moment watching those things and then he executes on his set pieces and it's, I'm a complete fan. Like those things are nuts. And Inception is no, I know you don't like Leonardo DiCaprio and Ellen Page.
Yeah, that movie is a, and I'm not like, you know what? Never mind. It just doesn't matter.
I know, right? Yeah.
That movie is hard for me.
Proving my point, but. When I'm in it and then I get those set pieces, like I said, I just think they're unmatched in a way. Like
I think I recognize that there is substance to his films. I also recognize that his films tend to have Inception is a great example. Inception is styled all over the place, man. There is a look to it. There is a feel to it. Top to bottom.
All of it.
Every,
dude, Following, Memento, everything. It's the same thing. Yeah.
Every sequence is like his movies almost feel to me, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but you could almost take any of his movies and plug pieces into his other movies. They're that interchangeable in terms of how they look, how they feel, how they sound, how they're acted, all of it.
Sure.
I think all of them are that way. I don't know that it's a bad thing, but my issue with Inception has been the fact that for as much substance as maybe there is in that movie to me was all style. And it wasn't like outside of two specific sequences. I spent the movie going, it was all right. Like, I don't love it. I just don't. I don't love anything the man has done outside of maybe Memento.
Sure. Again, I can understand any of that.
But again, you know, here's the thing with Inception too, which you already touched on. Change the actors and maybe I love it. I don't know.
No, you're touching on exactly what I said, is that I think what I'm saying is that I buy into the substance where you say there isn't any substance, you know, potato, potato, whatever. Like, I think the substance that is there, I buy. And it,
sure.
Like, I never got, and I don't know if this is the sequence you're talking about, like the whole thing where Jason Gordon-Levitt is like having the fist fight in zero G because they're jumping off the bridge and that, like, I didn't really put all of those pieces together the first time around, I've seen it, maybe this is the third time. So the second time around. But this time, and the funny thing was, I'm watching this with my daughter, who we recently showed her The Matrix, and I did have to explain, you know, pause and explain a couple times. With this one, and this maybe speaks more to you, never had a problem. I'm like, okay, do you understand? She's like, yeah, three dreams, I get it, whatever. Okay.
Got it.
This isn't hard to understand. Yeah.
And no, like, that is a, so that's a moment where I think the execution on the idea is fantastic. But the substance throughout that is like, you get like, it's here's the germ of an idea. And again, I'm not saying there isn't story and substance to what he's telling. I just like nothing Cobb does in that movie. Like everything he did, like, it's just, no, I just,
DiCaprio is still not my favorite in that.
I'm not into it. I'm just not. And then there were, I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember thinking that I had issues with the characters in general and how everything came together. Like, I felt like, I'd have to rewatch it. I felt like there were characters that were used, and I want to say it was Bane in particular, that he gets underutilized and he could have resolved the whole thing, or that maybe she could have. And I don't remember why I felt this way. There was something about it where I was like, why didn't you just talk to him or get him to do the thing? And then it's done. You've made it into this, like, I've got to go into another sure. dream because you're making it harder on yourself. Because
that's the other thing though, about Nolan, like, so many rules that it almost falls apart. Like I said, it walks that line between, you know, this is actually silly, not, you know, serious. But.
And I like the concept of going into the dream and into another dream. Like, that all is really interesting conceptually.
And I don't think you can do that without a bunch of rules. So I get it.
Right.
I really do. But, you know, yeah. Cool. Inception. A Talking Cat, all I will say, it's a Riff Trax, number one. I highly recommend it. It's also not a Riff Trax, but it was conceived of as not a Riff Trax. But there is a Riff Trax of it, and I believe it's one of those ones that you can, it's like it's a VOD, you know, because normally you download the tracks and you can sync it yourself. This one, some they can get the rights to, and they just release the movie with their thing. But this is why it's weird to me, because it's the recent movie, number one, so it's not the Mystery Science thing where they're making fun of super old, badly made movies. It's very much this post, I call it post Friday, because remember when that song came out and was
everywhere,
made
for like
fun
a week?
Of but then it got legitimately popular.
Yeah.
It felt like, you know, outside of it being a joke.
Yeah,
I think this is part of that in movie form. It's very much this part of culture that I don't understand just yet, where the thing that is the joke attains a certain legitimate popularity. And I'm not saying that people couldn't have made this movie very seriously and with a lot of love, but it appears
but
more to have been made as a joke almost type thing. And, you know, it's very weird, but it's also very weird. So... it's a fantastic Riff Trax.
That's why I feel like we should always make movies.
It's like the great great grandpa of Rocky Horror, right? Or The Room, you know, like something that wasn't necessarily made, but was in a way, like the people. And I haven't seen Rocky Horror maybe ever in its entirety, but yes, I know they're in on it. Let's say, right? They're in on it. Tim Curry is in on it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong.
No, okay. No. Tim Curry was... Everybody that's in the movie was in the stage production, the original stage production. It was written and directed by the guy who played Riff Raff, Richard O'Brien. They all knew what it was. None of them had blinders on. They didn't know. They didn't know it was not going to be as well received film wise, and they didn't know it was going to become a cult hit. But they knew what it was.
And I guess to say that The Room is the same thing might be not exactly correct, because you get the feeling Tommy Wiseau didn't.
Oh, he didn't know.
No, from time
he
to time,
thought
so.
He made something amazing.
Either way, it's. It's a weird thing that Riff Trax can only make better. I only have one more thing I want to give you, right?
Okay.
This is...
Is it coronavirus?
More... yes, but no. It's more of an exercise or an exorcism, as I mentioned in that little blurb last week. I just want to read to you verbatim my Mary Poppins notes, because I finished the movie and I feel like we can close out the show on this.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Before you do that, though, let's go ahead and do the standard here. Podcast at bookclubformovies.com. We'll be here next week. Come back. You can find us Facebook, Twitter. We're going to end with this diatribe.
And next week we're doing the Black Lives Matter all that long list of movies that we said we're going to watch. So take your pick. Mary Poppins, The Notes.
The Notes.
It's The Matrix and DVD, who it's Dick Van Dyke I came to abbreviate. Is the architect. I don't know how much of this I haven't seen and how much of it I thought was The Sound of Music. This movie is a Song Olympics. Okay, this might actually benefit from some CGI. Here comes the special effect. Because they're like, you can tell when it's about to, because it looks like,
The film grain changes, right? And everything.
Yep. Never get the feeling it's that imagination question. She just magic. And last but not least, more interested in raising nannies than his kids leads to banking escapade that's great. Loses kids, does work better with the setup. Well, gee, that kind of... The notes went nowhere too towards the end, I guess. That's the show.
Thanks for sticking around this long.
Has it been that long? Hey, if you think about like how long we didn't record,
yeah,
it's actually pretty good. Like, we saved the people some time.
You know what?
Overall.
You're right. I think we should definitely be paid for this. Buy me something.